Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
And I'm Charles Archer.
And what we're going to be doing today, well, we're actually going to be delving into the much-anticipated review of the original 12 for 25. There's going to be a review of the additional stocks we added as well. I think we chose one each, and then there's going to be addition of a new one. So checking in on it, how each one of those stocks has performed so far this year or at this point in the year, sharing any updated outlooks on the stocks and flagging any notable shifts in strategy, momentum or risk. Before we get started, don't forget to like, subscribe and hit the bell icon so you never miss an episode. So, Kev, give us an overview now of where we are on the whole kind of portfolio as a whole.
Okay, so the simplest way of putting it is on my app, I put £10,000 into each stock at the time that we indicated it was going to go in, okay? So right now we are 61.28% up overall. So we would have invested £150,000 roughly in the 15 overall stocks that we've now chosen. And we would be up £93,000 since the beginning, okay, at £246,000 from our 150, which those numbers don't actually correlate completely. So maybe there's a few mistakes, but ultimately we're up over 60% since we began. So I think we just take stock by stock.
Yeah.
There's 12, then we go to the 3, and then we will choose one more for the rest of this year, and then we won't choose any more until Christmas.
Okay, so we'll start with you, Kev. Your first one is Power Metal Resources. Power is the ticker.
Okay, so Power Metal Resources, I mean, there's not much to say other than it's massively undervalued, to be honest with you. We've got GMET, a big holding in GMET. We've got the drilling starting in the, whatever it's called in Canada, what is it, the Athabasca.
Yeah.
Even the Athabasca Basin.
Reminds me of Alabaster as well, that one. I don't know why.
Okay, and I think...
Probably because they sound similar, Phil, I'd imagine.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, in excess of £10 million, I think, going into the ground and drilling in this area. And, you know, and there's countless other assets within Power Metal Resources. How it's stayed where it is when the GMET price has actually probably gone up significant amount, and Charles is going to talk about the GMET in a minute. But yeah, I think it's one that currently is not really moved, is neither probably up nor down in terms of the year, but ultimately I can't see how it won't move in the second half of the year based on
what do you think the market's missing on this, guys?
Well, on Power, I think it's I don't know. I mean, there's a few companies like, you know, Bazant, which we'll probably talk about in a moment, or a Tech Capital. Or Raybould at one point, you know, had more cash than its market cap. The market is based on sentiment, right? Like we like to pretend that it's all sort of value and you can like decide share prices based on a balance sheet, but it's all sentiment based. And the sentiment around Power has, you know, not been positive for a while. And yet you've got, you know, millions of cash in the bank. I guess the cash in the bank and the Guardian Metal shareholding is probably generally at the moment is worth more than what the market cap is. Then you've got Power Arabia. I think FDR is going to IPO at some point later this year, simply because of the ASX listing of, well, they've changed the name now, haven't they? Greatland Resources is, you know, a good catalyst for them. But I think you just need a big bang, you need a catalyst, and then it should shoot back up.
Yeah, I agree. It hasn't had that sexy catalyst, if you like, though the GMET thing is pretty damn good. Yeah, it should be worth, in my view, at minimum, it should be worth 100% more than it is now. Just on the fact that it's got expiration and all the other stuff that's going on. And as Charles said, I think the FDR thing in Australia is likely to happen. And when that happens, then we might have another GMET on our hands, you know. So then it's going to be positive.
Well, on the subject of GMET, Charles, over to you.
Guardian, I mean, I probably need to write something comprehensive on this whenever I have time. But Guardian, you know, kind of going from strength to strength. It's up 100% this year, potentially, you know, which is not too shabby. Hopefully that we've got more coming, though. I mean, we were talking about £1 a share and by the end of the year when we were talking the start of this year. So hopefully we'll get there. But I think it's the fact you now have co-flagships. I think the grant funding for Pilot Mountain will be literally any day. Any day it's coming in. I mean, I said June. I've given myself July. If it doesn't come in July, I'll throw the crystal ball away and apologize. But I think the grant funding is coming down the line for Pilot Mountain. But then the other point is that, you did at the co-flagship Tembuite, the mineralization that they have found at this project, there are the 1300 meter skarn zone with samples up to 0.94% tungsten. And you've also got decent gallium values as well. But possibly, like, there's this newly staked area that they've added in the Worthington system. And you've got standout assays at 2.66% WO3, which is, really, really, really strong. And this is all early days stuff. But basically, you now have this, the idea is you're going to corner the American tungsten market. And GMET, there's a couple of other companies out there that are trying, but GMET is furthest ahead. And it just re recently got admitted to the Critical Minerals Forum, which operates in partnership with DARPA, so the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency's Open Price Exploration for National Security. The US loves its acronyms, but basically what it means is that they are in the inner circle they're in. So give it time. We'll get the grant funding for Pilot Mountain relatively shortly, I think. And then I think Tembuite, the US wants to get their own domestic tungsten up and running, and then we're away.
Yeah, and how Power Metal doesn't respond if GMET continues to boom up will be very surprising.
Well, I think the thing is you've got choices there, right? Like, Sean was smart, in my opinion, to sell some of the GMET holding to ACAM. I believe, yeah, it was ACAM. ACAM are a fantastic supporter, and just ACAM being a large, well, the largest shareholder, supports the share price significantly regardless. But if you get to that point, what can you do? He could sell more of the shares if he wanted to and get even more cash, and then go launch Powerarabia by himself, or potentially, retain hold of the shareholding. And then leverage that to use more capital to do something else. But I think the key thing is you have to do something with the money. So when the Power Metal sold the Guardian Metal shares, and after they paid everything off, they got about 7 million-ish quid.
Yeah, I think so.
And it was a few months ago, and we don't know, we haven't seen what their plan to do with it. I imagine it's going to be Powerarabia slash FDR, but we will see. Hopefully there'll be a big catalyst and it'll shoot up.
Yeah,
Okay.
absolutely.
Okay, so I've got a Cobra Resources next. In May, they completed it. It was a 10-hole sonic core drilling program at Boland, targeting these heavy rare earths with assay results pending. And in late May, they acquired additional land around Boland site to support the project expansion. And then I guess the biggest RNS of late was, I think it was the 30th of June, there was an announcement that they'd entered a conditional sale agreement with Barton Gold for the Wudinna Gold Project, which is, I think it's got a resource estimate of about 279,000 ounces of gold, potentially worth up to 15 million Aus dollars, not the gold, but the actual, that was, what that's what the conditional sale agreement was worth. And obviously we're just, the transaction awaits Cobra shareholders approval in July. I believe that's going to happen potentially. So I think to summarize, really, they're progressing well on the Boland drilling, and then obviously trying to finalize the sale of these Wudinna assets, which is a bit meaningful move to, monetize this gold resource and then focus on the rare earth development. So I think it's performed well, Kev. What's Cobra moved up for the last sort of few months?
Well, on the photograph I took, it was 2.07, so it's like up 80%. So really, that gold, it sat around 1.4 to 1.5 for a long time, and then has moved now on this gold announcement. So it's over, sitting around the 2p mark. You tipped it at 1.15p. So yeah, and I think I was going to ask you, but I think it's got a long way to go, to be honest. I think it's one of those ones that could do very well.
Yeah. Okay, so on to Greatland for yourself.
Yeah, well, what is it to say about Greatland, really, that everybody else hasn't already said? So I'm not going to waste too much time. It's good. It's done incredibly well this year so far. Will it continue? I think so. I think the Australians are gonna love it and start lapping it up. But I think there's a bit of a, what's the right word? A bit of waiting time and probably games being played by different people who have to basically take it on. But as its market cap rises, then it's going to be in more and more of these different plays that have to hold the stocks, both in the ASX and in the gold plays, whether it be GDJX,
GDXJ, yeah.
GDXJ. So yeah, I don't see it going any other way other than up, to be honest. I mean, we've got a gold price now that's pulled back a little bit, but I think we're going to have $4,000 gold in the next 12 months for sure. It might even be this year. And that's just going to make this look so profitable, it's frightening, really.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing with Greatland is I joined the ASX too late for the last kind of review. But if it gets when we do ASX 200 inclusion potentially late September, that's going to be a huge, huge catalyst for it because every index fund in the ASX 200 will be buying it. So, you know, that's what I'm keeping my eyes peeled for. For me, next one, Amaroq Minerals. I think we're down 20% year to date. I'm not particularly concerned about that share price performance. It's mildly frustrating, but I've been in this one for a long time and we're up, you know, very significantly over the past sort of 4 or 5 years. And to my mind, basically, it's the future, right? With these kind of like really high quality stocks that I like Greatland Resources now or Sovereign Metals, you know, Greatland is getting beyond the point where, you know, we cover it as junior analysts or commentators. Sovereign Metals, I think, will not exist in a year. I think it'll be gone. We can talk about that in a bit. And so when you're looking at sort of really high quality kind of mid-tiers trying to become a major, Amaroq for me is the future. I mean, they just raised well, 45 million pounds, a lot of it within, you know, big institutions and Denmark's, you know, own investment fund put in $15.4 million. The gold production is going well. The exploration is going well. They've established a new Western Greenland hub and they just listed on the OTCQX best market. So further driving US investors. And the CEO Elder just, you know, talked to Bloomberg about basically he's in talks with state-backed agencies in both the US and the EU for state loans, offtakes, direct investments. Trump obviously wants, you know, not only the rare earth minerals, but you know, everything else that Greenland has to offer. And in order to exploit Greenland, you need to do it for Amaroq because they're the only company with the expertise to do it. So I think it's gonna recover and then go on to new highs.
So my next one is Greenrock Strategic Materials. Grok is the ticker. They raised a small amount of cash via share subscription at the beginning of June, but the big event that drove the share price is up about 52% from the beginning of the year. I think on the 4th of June, there was an announcement that Amitsoq, their graphite project in Greenland, was officially granted strategic project status by the European Commission under the Critical Raw Materials Act, and obviously advancing permitting and potential EU funding for them. That was very, very pivotal news for them. Obviously, this ESG aligned EU recognition means that Amitsoq is now firmly on Europe's radar for, you know, potential domestic critical minerals, and it has performed pretty well. I don't think there's a lot more else to say on it, unless anyone's got a comment on that.
Yeah, it's just that Amitsoq is right at the bottom of Nalunaq, Amaroq's, you know, deposit. So my only comment on it is that in terms of it actually being able to be developed, it's in the right part of Greenland for that to be able to happen. Because there's definitely mines out there that just have no zero chance. Yeah.
Very good. Bazant, next for you, Kev.
Again, House has already mentioned it. I'm not going to elaborate. In the last quarter, we've now had the definitive mining license for 15 years, I think it is, for Hope and Gorok. We've also got Blackstone shares worth in the region of $8 million, US dollars. Market cap's not even as high as that yet, which seems a bit bizarre, considering basically you've got Hope and Gorok for free, which is ridiculous. And yeah, I think it's an absolute screaming bargain. It's up in the region of about 20% since we tipped it. But the reality is it has got a long, 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 long way to go. And
I'm not. Yeah.
I will read because they say that plagiarism is the best form of
Battery.
flattery. So I'm going to read Charles's words. Bazant has now received a formal mining certificate for mining license ML246 Hope and Gorok, which is valid until the 31st of March 2040. CapEx to this mine up and running likely stands at around $15 million, and free cash flow at current copper gold pricing runs at $50 million a year from the open pit alone. It is a gold mine, literally. The best news is that the company holds circa $8 million US in Blackstone Minerals, and the ASX company has just fielded a cornerstone commitment from Macquarie Bank for 22.5 million share placement. They raised a fortune, didn't they? Is there a chance Bazan takes the cash out now? It's done very well since the deal, and then a risk-sharing term sheet for the balance form from one of Colin's many partners. I think it's going to fly. So I can't add anything to that. I think the reality is that that is an absolute screaming buy of all the shares in the portfolio that we've got.
Yeah, well, I think it's the big thing for me is that when you're looking at like around $15 million to get it up and running, if you want a risk sharing contract, you're going to need to put forward half. And we have $8 million in Blackstone Minerals shares. the fact that Macquarie is just cornerstoned 22.5 million, they'll be able to get those 8 million out during this if they want to. I have no insight to whether Common is going to do that, but that's what I would do. Yeah, I think we're off to the races with that one fairly shortly.
And
Go on.
the interesting thing is that I think there's a fairly good chance that, yes, he might have the chance to get the shares out, but I also think there's a fairly good chance that the Blackstone share price will appreciate pretty rapidly after this deal is done.
You have to remember, they still have warrants as well on top of that 8 million.
Yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head how much, but like it's a decent amount at a very low level. So you
Yeah,
can take the money out.
it's not that many. It's maybe potentially worth another $500,000 to $1 million.
So what is, I'm assuming that what you're thinking, and this is obviously just me kind of like having an idea, are you thinking that maybe they might take the money from the Blackstone out and use that to fund some element of the
Yeah.
mine,
So
is it?
if you want like a risk sharing term sheet, right? If you say the plant is going to cost $15 million and there's
Yeah.
a nearby processing plant, right? You need to put up half, so 7.5 million. Yeah. The shares are currently worth 8 million. They might go up, they might go back down. There is risk there. You can take those shares out now because Macquarie's cornerstoning the placing. People will want them at that price. There'll be enough demand to do
Yes.
it. And then you can go fund your half. And then you can go to a partner and say, we've got our half and we've got the license. You do your half and you pay the tolling fee at the processing plant when it gets moved along. Again, this is what I would do. I can't recommend Colin to do it because I don't give advice. But one of the key things about it is that with Macquarie cornerstoning this placement, you will be able to sell them at face value.
Yeah.
Once that is, all done and dusted in the next week or two, you might struggle to sell more because you can't dump that many shares on the market,
No, market, yeah, you need to.
Whereas they're currently the iron is hot. There will be high net worth investors and institutions who will be happy to take them at face value.
And I mean, the numbers were written there that Charles wrote that it would be $15 million of investment to produce circa
50
$50 million
million.
dollars of free cash flow. That's not $50 million of revenue.
It's actually, the thing is, it's more now because copper has gone up and gold has gone up again. But obviously, those numbers can. When I first did them 8 months ago, that was 30 million. So just to give a bit of perspective, it could grow up and down by a lot. But bottom line, if your CapEx is 15 million, you're currently paying off the CapEx in 4 months.
Yeah, the CapEx has gone inside, let's say, 12 months to
Well,
be
that's, but oh, not even that.
triple
You, if
negative.
you, If you if you were producing started producing now, you'd pay it off before Christmas with ease.
Yeah, and then how much is, let's be conservative and say it's £30 million free cash flow.
$30
How
million.
much is a $30 million free cash flow business in copper and gold worth?
It's tricky because I think we've only got, I'm not sure, I can't remember off the top of my head, it's a 6 or an 8 year mine life, right?
Yeah,
So
in the open pit, that is, yes.
yeah, but obviously you've got the extensions have already been looked at, and then you've got the massive, I can't remember what was it, like was there 60 kilometer strike as
Yeah, well,
well?
it's originally 17 and another 50 on top of that.
Yeah. So I mean basically you're like the upside is massive, but the thing is for me, we were talking about like valuing like Power Metal or Bazan, these are two companies where the share price, the market capitalization is well under the fundamentals and the cash or the value of shares in the business. The market works on sentiment. Basically, when we say sentiment, what you mean is you need an asset sale or you need production slash revenue. Those are the things that move. Or you need outstanding, assays from drilling. But basically, you need revenue. So, yeah, I think get into revenue production. The first month, you say, yeah, we've made like $4 million this month for free cash flow. It'll re-rate immediately. So, I think personally, I just think the quickest way to do that, sell the Blackstone Mineral shares if you can. Build the thing, which might take 9 months, I think, roughly. And then, this time next year, you're laughing.
And at minimum, you've got a 50, £60 million market cap, as far as I can see.
Yeah, I think so.
So you're basically more than 10 times from here.
Okie dokie. I think we talked about, yeah. Is it Michael? Is it Rome? I think
Yeah,
it might
Rome.
be.
It's Rome,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
When in Rome, when in Rome, mate, when
when
in
in
Rome.
Rome. So, it's been a fun 6 months, There's nothing quite like rebels trying to take over, well, not trying to, invading your busy and adjacent mine, causing a bit of mayhem. This is the thing with DRC, right? You have the highest grade, most incredible assets out there in the world, but it's incredibly politically unstable. Awful for the people living up there as well. But then we had this earthquake in Myanmar, and the world's tin trading houses, would not allow both Myanmar and DRC to be offline for tin production. So, you can't negotiate with damage caused by an earthquake. You can go to a relatively poor country like Rwanda and a very poor country like the DRC and say, look, we need tin. And now we have a peace deal signed. Throughout all of, the share price weakness and then all the way back up, I was very confident that we would get peace again. And now we've got the peace. Now, the good news is, in terms of the sort of like corporate development side, we've got a discovery of a whole new tin zone at Busy North and a 40-meter intercept in hole 30. And what's really significant about this is it's outside the existing drill footprint and the current tin and sol anomaly. So we've got potential for even more upside. We've had four drill holes totaling 737 meters. It's polymetallic, so tin, copper, and zinc. And again, some of these intercepts based on XRF, 54 meters of tin, 80 meters of zinc, 57 meters of tin, 71 meters of copper, 12 meter zone approximating 13% zinc. So you've got this massive polymetallic scale. They've delayed being made an MRE from this month to September because they found all this new stuff. And there's, still drilling with three rigs, so helicopter transport has become a bit of a bottleneck.
Lots of good stuff going on, and I don't think there's any doubt in anybody's mind that this is a tin mine, right? I don't think that's the situation. The situation with this one is, has the market overstated the political risk here? Because the share price is obviously, subdued, to say the least, was lower, obviously, but then the thing came back a little bit. But has the market overdone the political risk?
I think they have done because this is just my view. You've got China in Rwanda that wants to get the tin, the coal, and gold out of both Rwanda and the DRC. You've got the US actively negotiating with the DRC to provide security in exchange for minerals. You've got IRH, which, as you guys will know, is the Middle East and Saudi Arabia outfit, which has just taken a massive stake in Busy, the mine next door, which was, found and operated by the Roam Resources team before they moved on. So you've got Saudi Arabia, China, and the US, and they're all interested in maintaining peace and stability, all for their own reasons. I think that this is the DRC, so it would not surprise me to see more rebels flare up every so often. Like, it's just the nature of where we are in the world. But you also have the largest powers in the world all wanting it to stay calm and relatively peaceful. And then the only other point I would make is that when it comes to like a tin mine, it's very specialist to be able to operate it. And tin is not like gold that you can just, take out of the ground and nick and sell on the market. It's complex. So the mine has no value unless you have these people operating it anyway. That's my two cents.
Yeah, I think it's probably oversold based on that political side of things, to be honest. But it has come back. I mean, in terms of your overall, it's only down 12% in the year.
I think, yeah, and I think,
Considering what's actually happened.
I think, this is the problem, right? Because like, if something's down like 80, 90%, then that's a big problem, right? But when like a smaller exploration play is down 10, 15% or up 10, 15%, often that's the spread on the stock as well. Like it's just almost meaningless, And I'll say that for once are up 10% as well. When you're at that level, it's kind of 1 5-grand sell can, bring it, drag it back up or bring it back up. So it's, yeah. Anyway,
Absolutely. I agree.
Mr. Phil.
So my next one's Sovereign Metals. They've had a few updates. Share price, I think, remains. Where are we with it? It's probably down a little bit, isn't it, since the beginning of the year? We're on about -9% by the looks of it on the stats we've got. But in terms of news flow, they've had quite a few pieces from sort of May to July. Power supply and hydropower initiative in late May. They signed an MOU regarding the power supply and secured approval for a hydropower project in Malawi, which will obviously strengthen the infrastructure strategy for Kaseya. There was a few, shareholder position announcements in early June. There was also an interesting Japanese titanium validation. On the 9th of June, there was an RNS that stated that a Japanese titanium producer had validated Sovereign's rutile quality from Kaseya, which obviously reinforced confidence in that high value byproducts. Then there was an announcement that, it's all about the kind of like the farming program out there in Malawi, and that they reported that the conservation farming program in Malawi, not far from Lilongwe, had boosted agricultural yields fourfold, which obviously underscores the company's commitment to local sustainability. So it's good to see them supporting the whole kind of farming community out there, very close to the mine site. And then there was an update in late June with the quarterly outlook, where Sovereign outlined plans to obviously advance its DFS, which is what everybody's waiting for. And then obviously there's going to be a potential update to the mineral resource estimate and more test work completing for the graphite. And then obviously formalize any offtake discussions that potentially might come out of that. So, yeah, good progress forward. I think the market is missing a trick with this one in terms of the share price right now, with obviously Rio on as an investor in the company. And I just don't know, will an offer come? Will it be this month, 2 months, 6 months? Who knows? But I think an offer's going to come.
I think an offer is going to come. So once the DFS lands, Rio Tinto has 180 days to decide whether to become operator of the largest rutile and the second largest graphite deposit in the world. All of the technical details on this asset has, been satisfied. Now, the three things for me that Sovereign needs to prove, maybe not prove isn't the right word, but the things that people maybe are thinking about, is political risk, as in Malawi, whether they can have the financial firepower to build it themselves, Rio don't want it. And getting willing off-takers, to, co-finance that risk. And my view is all of those things, that political backing, that financial firepower, those off-takers, they're going to need to come in Q3, so in the next 3 months, because the DFS lands in Q4. And what you want to have, you need to make sure that they are their own competitive tension. You need to make sure that if Rio Tinto needs to know that Sovereign can build it themselves in order to put in the bid that we want to see. And it feels like it's a bit frustrating because it's a lot of legwork, which will likely end up being a waste of time in terms of on the ground. But in terms of achieving the best price possible, Rio Tinto needs to know that if they say, here's a low offer, Sovereign can say, we'll build it ourselves. No thanks.
Yeah, and they've been increasing everybody's crops by 4 to 6 times as well because of the different social things that they're doing all around it. But my simple thing is, and it's not technical at all, is if you want a 3 to 5 bag company that you're willing to sit there and wait for probably 1 year from now, with yes, slight risk, but very limited risk based on what work they've already done to this point, with a team of management that knows what they're doing, then this is the play for you.
Good.
Okay,
Good.
Kev, to you, I think, and this one is the best performer out of all of the stocks within the 12. So go for it.
Okay, so we've got Mast Energy, which has gone bananas since we talked about it at the beginning of the year, 0.17 pence, I think it was. As we speak now, it's 1.4p. Caught a bid, quite obviously. It was a company in distress at the start of this year, and though we'd followed the story from this time last year, if you remember, Phil, I think basically it's just building on what it's got. It's had commitment now for £5 million in terms of a deal, and also now the potential for £15 million that will be that basically dripped in over the next 6 months or so in warrants, with the first £5 million already coming as soon as the AGM was passed, which I think was about last week. I spoke to Peter during the week, and he's very happy and very confident that this is going to allow them to have many, many more funding options to get up to this 300 megawatts. And yeah, I think it's going to. I mean, what can you say about a stock that has already done 723% this year? Not a lot, really. Can it do more? I think it can, but at 723%. You think you should be taking some off the table at 700%?
Well, I've got a question on you on that because obviously there's going to be a large amount of shares that are going to be issued for this whole, the whole kind of acquisition and the movement. So, what would that value the company at when you take in the total amount of shares that are going to be outstanding in the company if it remains at
Yeah,
this share price?
if it's done at the same level that it is at the minute, then I think you're talking about the company being worth a few £100 million.
Yeah.
Now, that few £100 million has to be justified by the fact that they move to 100, 200, 300 megawatts pretty damn quickly over the next 12 to 18 months. And I think that's what's going to happen. And I think that's what Peter thinks is going to happen as well, because the cash is going to be available, the funding's going to be available. Just think how easy it's going to be for them probably to raise 10, £15 million, even if your market cap's 100 million. It's going to be a million times easier. to get everything up and going. So there is definitely inherent risk in it at this level. But my view is, if you've been in it since I first talked about it and you haven't taken any money off the table, then you're nuts, you know? But I still hold it. I've got to position myself in my pension, so I'm still holding.
Yeah, I think this is, especially when something like properly spikes, when it goes 600, 700, 800, 900%, right? Something that like I'm not good at is selling when I've made a good profit and knowing when enough is enough, right? And it doesn't mean selling the whole position. It means sometimes taking out your original stake, which is a lot easier psychologically, or, cutting a little bit or top slicing. And I think also when you enter like a trade in like the blue chip world, you know where your exit is, and then you exit. And in small caps, it becomes very kind of personal. Like you really struggle to sell stuff when it does really well. And yeah, I think it's something everyone, all of us are probably not good
A good
at.
example of that would have been a smarter web company. How many people would have exited after one times, two times, three times, you know?
I exited Smarterweb at 4 times,
Yeah.
and I thought I was a genius.
And
I could be retired.
you would have got 50, maybe 60, 70, 80, 100. So
Cointelium, I did better, and I held my nerve a bit longer. But then actually, these all, they do what crypto treasury companies always do, is that they crash down and then they'll go to new highs in a week or two, I'd imagine. Cross my fingers, some of them. But
yeah, no, I think we're going to have another run in BTC, but let's not get distracted from BTC. But
I mean, basically.
the issue is, when you made a profit, you need to take some off the table
Yeah.
without doubt. And because it's the same when we have a loss, you know, sometimes you have to turn around and say, I need to cut that loss. I need to take it on the chin and say,
I
that wasn't
think
the right decision. Things have changed.
like I purposefully try never to TR1 in anything because, to be honest, it becomes much harder to sell from like a personal reputation point of view, right? But when you own 2% of a company, it becomes much harder to sell, A, at a fair price, and B, without, just destroying other people's investments. So it becomes a moral question as well, especially when it's a microcap. But anyway, next.
Jubilee for you now, Annette Charles.
Jubilee, jubilant, jubilee. Yeah. So basically, we are, it's all change. All trains change, basically. They're getting out of South Africa, assuming this deal goes according to plan. And they're going full whack into Zambia with $90 million. Now, no, I don't have to imagine actually, and just look on any chat board, there's plenty of investors who are wary of this decision and don't think that it's the right way to go. I think it is risky. I think you have increased your risk basis. You have a stable company out in South Africa, though there is political risk there. So you've got to bear that in mind in the context of a sale. And then you're going to say, right, what we're going to do is we're going to go with $90 million, and we're going to go, corner a large portion of Zambia, which is probably the hottest copper region on earth at the moment. The share price, what is flat year to date, I'd imagine at the moment, within a few percent, there's not much in it. And you basically your choices, what are your choices? Your choices are to say, if you're invested in Jubilee for the South African operations, for that stable operation, then maybe this isn't stock for you anymore. But what I would say is that over the years, Jubilee built that chrome business up from scratch, breaking into a market with reefs that nobody thought were viable. And they built it into a large company. If they do the same in Zambia, but starting with $90 million, you'll probably find that the upside from here is significant. I think it's going to blow at some point in the near future. It will blow, and a lot of the things is obviously Sable is running well, but a lot of it is getting Rern properly up and running. But I think after the teething problems, it'll be getting there within the next 6 months. What are your thoughts, Kev?
I think you're right. I think they're swapping one risk for another, but what they're swapping is one risk that they don't own the proprietary mines to another risk that they do and they will have control of the whole system. So you could argue that that's less risk. Country-wise, is Zambia riskier than South Africa? I think that's a toss of the coin, personally. I think both are risky. But I think the potential, having visited the place, having visited some of these mines that they've now bought, my view is that if they work it well, then the potential upside is far, far greater than what South Africa would have been. Far greater. I mean, in many magnitudes. So if they can get an operation going, produce 25, 35, 45, 50,000 tons of contained copper over the next 1 to 2 years, then this will be a £1 billion company, which is what I said a year and a half ago, but it didn't happen because of all of the different challenges, if you like, that have come up in Zambia, which one by one they've had to face and overcome. And I think they have now. So going forward, you know, I think I'm going to be a stern critic if they don't achieve the things that they want to achieve.
I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see. I think it's very exciting, and I also think that if you like just look at the JLG share price at the moment, it's £109 million market cap, right? So if you're getting $90 million, say £75 million into a company, the enterprise value of Roe and Sable, all of the mines, you're looking at what, 30, 35 million pounds, which is ridiculous, ridiculous. You could sell those for double or triple that, tomorrow. So you're getting a very, very good price on fundamentals. And I would say, just in terms of like Zambian jurisdictional risk, Zambia wants, they've got incredibly ambitious plans to develop copper because they know that it's their meal ticket, their only way to drive development in the country. And they've learned their lesson. Back when Anglo American left in the early 2000s, and so did every other major, the economy collapsed. They're not going to want to do that again. So, yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
great.
Okay, so my final one of the 12 is priority intelligence, and this is the one that's actually performed the worst. It's about 47%, let's call it 50% down since the beginning of the year. That we'll go into the reasons potentially why that has happened in a minute. But in terms of news flow, that there's not been a lack of news flow. They've had some pretty good, they were effectively admitted to AIM via the RTO, which happened at the end of last year, at sort of 30th of December 2024, just before New Year's. Capitano AI consulting, they got the leukemia care announcement, which is very good. They got the sports announcement, and then the first US client for the Capitano AI as well. There was a funding circle, which was one of the strategic collaborations as well, which enabled, small, medium enterprise SMEs to access any debt finance through the priorities technology. They also announced in sort of May, June that they'd launched the cryptocurrency payments accepting via Coinbase Commerce, and they unveiled this new private or private crypto SaaS targeting 5 million SMEs for Bitcoin payments. They also adopted one of our favorite Bitcoin treasury management policies in late May, formalizing Bitcoin for operational treasury use. And then there was the news also about the Halfspace acquisition as well, which was obviously as a share purchase agreement on the 9th of June, which was finally announced at the beginning of July, that had all been approved through the AGM or for the general meeting, which is a profitable sports data and marketing business with about £930,000 of revenue and about 100,000 of EBITDA on the books as well. So looks very good. There's been, as I say, no shortage of announcements since they've come to market. They also filed application for cross trade on the OTCQB as well to improve potential North American investor access. I guess the question I've got for you both is, why has the share price dropped back potentially 50%, do you think, since the listing?
Well, I think there's a few. I mean, the first thing is they need to announce. When they first listed, the idea was to get loads of kind of smaller clients paying a little bit of money. Now the strategy seems to be changed. They want bigger clients that are paying more money. Those clients take more time to be onboarded, but obviously worth a lot more. So what we're looking for now is those client announcements. We need more clients, as simple as that. If you only need two or three, and then it'll start popping back up. I mean, we've seen the volatility. We're saying it's down 50%. Yeah, to a day, and maybe that's not particularly fair because it's popped up and down a lot in the
It
past few
went down
weeks.
almost 80%. It was down to about three
Yeah,
pence,
well,
didn't
if
it?
you recorded it a couple of months ago, you'd say 3p. If you recorded it 2 weeks ago or a week ago, you'd be down. So
10p.
it's not really fair to, it's but that's the game, especially investing kind of AI startups and crypto startups. It does just jump up and down a bit.
Okay, so
Okay,
let
let
me
me
get on your
rephrase.
soapbox. What has happened with
I
Brim?
was just going to say, I want to ask you a question about Prime Morris. What's happening there? Because there was an announcement that effectively one of the company that they effectively RTO'd into, who were in a share lock-in for 12 months, have broken AIM Rule 7, I believe, or breached Rule 7, whereby they announced that they'd disposed of all of their shares. So just tell us a bit more about that, Charles. Right. So the caveat is, I haven't seen the full contractual agreement. So if you haven't seen the full contract, then that is the caveat for all of these things. However, the company between Priority and Primoris, the AIM Rule 7, Primoris has broken it. It's as simple as that. They're banged to rights. They've sold up to roughly £1 million worth of shares when they weren't able to, basically stealing from everybody else who was locked in, including us, right? And other than, I sent various letters to various regulators, and I've had emails back, which I can't disclose, but I've had responses. And my hope is that Primoris is going to be forced to buy those shares back, and it will be delightful when they do. If they aren't forced to buy those shares back, then lock-in agreements are no longer viable on AIM and shouldn't be allowed to be written, created, or
Makes a
put into the
mockery of them,
pre-IPO.
basically. Just rip
Well,
them
making a
up.
mockery, they shouldn't exist.
Yeah,
If you
just
can
rip
break
them
them
up.
without being punished or without being forced to buy the shares back, they should not exist. Now, there are always ways around a softly regulated market, right? For many, many areas, and we're all aware of them. But when it's a lock-in agreement of specific shares held in a specific account, that's not soft regulation. That is hard regulation, and there is a reason for it. And if Primoris has broken AIM Rule 7, which is one of the only rules that people actually pay attention to, then they should be forced to pay the shares back. And my perspective is, if they're not forced to buy those shares back, then AIM should no longer be allowed to enforce or have lock-in agreements.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're pointless, utterly pointless.
Everybody may just move to Aquasum.
Well, it's not Aquas, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you ask why is AIM dying as an index, why is it struggling? I mean, you can talk about, the money all moving up to the blue chips, but this is exactly why. If people think it's, a scammy pump and dump, unregulated area. And I think on like a broader level, if you want to send a message that no, AIM is an index you can come and invest and trust, they should bring the hammer down. AIM regulation should bring the hammer down on Primoris and make an example of them. I sent out a tweet on the 30th of June, what, 102 likes, for AIM, that's not too shabby. Hundreds and hundreds of people. Like, people have had enough of being screwed over by AIM regulation. I think the last time they sent out a fine was in 2021. Was the last time a company broke the rules in 2021? No.
No. The interesting thing is that you asked why priority had gone down. Well, it's sort of connected because the chairman of said company also had 3.5% of Priority AI, but wasn't locked in. So, in other words, there wasn't any legal documentation to lock them in because he'd held those shares in Alteration Earth, and basically they'd missed it and messed up.
So
So,
here's a question for you.
and you can see it in the TR once, he sold down and basically took value from the company,
Well,
even
this is
though
but
from what.
also PR1 is an investee company of Primoris, so he damaged Primoris shareholders by selling his own shares ahead of the PR of Primoris's shares in PR1.
Yes. So he damaged his own people and
Yeah.
his own customers. So how much care does this guy have about one, his own customers, and two, about a business transaction that he did with Priority One? I mean, it's
And
important.
I think the really key thing is here is there, Priority Run is a small, growing AI company. Most people listening, potentially are not invested in it, but it's not about priority intelligence. It's about a functioning market with rules.
Yeah, no,
We should all,
you're 100% right. But if it is a functioning market, they have to buy those shares back. And many of you listening will be PR1 shareholders because it's
and
going
when
to go
they.
to the moon.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. If they do, if they do have to buy them back, and when they're told they have to buy them back, right? Here's what will happen: Primoris will go to the market makers, right, and they'll say, "We want to buy 11 million, 12 million shares back."
It's
And do
just
you know what the
under
market
12
makers are
million.
going to do? The market makers are going to call up all their high net worth friends, which they're not meant to, but they're going to because they're market makers, and they're going to go, "Look, this guy's got to buy 12 million shares. Buy some." Because you're going to make a profit. And then those high net worth investors will tell their kind of wealthy, but not, very wealthy friends. And then those not very wealthy friends will tell everyone else.
So basically, Charles, what you're saying is we'll see a spike in the share price, and that won't even be Primoris buying them. That'll be everyone getting
That'll
in
be everyone
shares.
before. And then
So I'm thinking
once
roaring,
taken
I'm
their
thinking
position, they'll be
GameStop
allowed to
roaring.
buy.
You're going to be our roaring kitty mate in that
Oh, it's
situation.
going to be super fun. The thing is, right, it's, you know, it's, everybody loves a short squeeze, right? And do you know what's better than a short squeeze? Is when
A
the
squeeze?
person hasn't even borrowed the shares and sold them, right? Legally, they said they had the shares, they owned them, and they sold them. It's going to be super fun. It's crossing my fingers that it happens because do you know what? Just more than anything else, just watching them have to buy back and lose a load of money, it's going to be really, really funny.
Yeah.
But.
Okay, so Kev, obviously we last time we were on, we reviewed and we added some stock. So take us through your new edition of where we are.
Yeah, my new addition is still asleep, really, though. They did have an announcement to say that they were going to be doing trading and in greater quantities. This came out in May. It's Tyrian I'm talking about, which has assets in Rwanda, that has a deal with Rio Tinto, a joint venture with Rio Tinto. They have very interesting assets in Botswana for copper, and they also have very interesting assets in Morocco for silver and copper. I'm still quite happy with my choice. It hasn't moved at all. Basically, it's exactly the same price as when I chose it, around the 40p mark, between 37 and 40p. And everything I said last time still stands. I think there's going to be action on many fronts going forward with Ethereum, and especially within the joint venture with Rio. I think there's other in-country stuff in Rwanda. I think they're in talks in Morocco for joint ventures, and also in Botswana. So any of those could really make the share price jump. And it's very lightly traded, so if anybody starts to like it, it's going to move, and move fast, is my point.
Okay, Charles.
Yeah, my one that I added was AgeMet. And we're there. We're there. Anyone who's kind of been long suffering in this stock, they raised 1.9 million at the end of May, so the dilution risk, doesn't really exist. On the 5th of June, we formally started the debt financing process for BKM Stage One Copper. We've got the optimized feasibility study, we've got the final independent technical expert report. The data room has been open for over a month. We're looking for a final investment decision. So it's simple, right? Just finance it and build it or sell it. And this one of those two things are going to happen before the end of 2025. And the share price, either way, is going to be double, triple where we are. Happy days. Happy.
Okay. Well, I went for IMU Pharma, IMM. They've not had a massive amount of news out since they were on. I think the 19th of May, there was some final results announced, narrowed the losses from 2.9 million to 2.5 million. And they're highlighting momentum in that P140 autoimmune platform. And then on the 19th of May, they confirmed talks with global partners regarding that P140 platform, signaling possible licensing or collaboration deals. But I think, the behind the scenes that they're continuing to make those strides in that autoimmune R&D and narrowing losses and strengthening the platform. So yeah, I've still got, a lot of belief in that one too, and in the products there with P140. And yeah, let's hope we get some updates on from IMU Pharma in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, I was speaking with Tim during the week, so he's very confident still with IMU Pharma. And yeah, he said we would hook up in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So yeah, there probably is updates coming, I would imagine.
Yeah. Okay, so we're gonna pick another one, Kev, I believe. What are you gonna go for your new addition this week, this month?
Well, my new edition is not really a new edition as such, because we did actually pick this and it went disastrous, I think, a year or so ago.
Okay.
But my new addition is Incantera, which is effectively a bio play, but really focusing on a delivery system into the skin, in like a dermo system. It had all sorts of problems because of individuals trying to interfere with patents and stuff like this, which allowed them, unfortunately, to lose deals with some of the big pharmaceutical companies that they were going to do business with. So that meant that the share price is absolutely smashed to the bottom, and they've just raised to 3.5p, and that's why I'm picking it now. They have the cash, they're going to go direct to market with a product that works, on the basis that a lot of these creams are fanciful and actually don't work, but this actually delivers the right thing to it. And the thing that really swayed me was the suntan cream situation, and the fact that you can deliver this SPF stuff to the derma. And I think it's something that we all use on a regular basis. And if you know that you've got one that really will protect you properly, then you're going to use it. And yeah, that's it, really. There's a lot more to the story. And if you want to listen to some of the podcasts we've done in the past, please do. But you're talking about being 4 or 5p at the minute. Will it
It
get back
was
to 30?
devastating for me because it was a company that I really believe, you know, when that all came about, those, you know, whatever, let's call them allegations, that the fact that they effectively confirmed in May that they'd lost the Marienord Switzerland deal, it would not proceed with that distribution of the Skin Plus Cell product range. Then they announced, as you say, in June that they were effectively were going to commit to this DTC strategy, direct to consumer. And I think they've effectively aiming to sell about 100,000 of these units via, which is actually interesting because they're going for an influencer-led campaign, which means that they're going to be targeting influencers to obviously, you know, spread the word. And they're going to apparently launch that in Q3. So it's pretty imminent. And I'm interested in seeing how successful. But if, I think from what I can see from the RNS, it looks like they're going to be using some sort of agency who's going to be basically paid on a performance-based, you know, system. So the better, the more products that they sell, then that you know, the more returns they get. So they've got a big impetus to actually get these products shifted, these 100,000 plus units. And I think like that this is the proof is in the pudding now, is if they can shift those 100,000 units, I think they've got a commitment by, is it Q1 of 2026 from memory on that one? I'm gonna double check it, but I think it is Q1. Then hopefully we can, you know, see the revenues on that and then they can scale it up.
Yeah, and the revenues and the, oh, sorry, not the revenues, the profit is going to be substantially higher because on the deal that they had with Marinoid, the profit was around 40 to 50%, and then they had to half that with the person who introduced them to Marinoid. This way, their profit margin is probably going to be 60 to 65%, and they're basically going to be keeping it all, I think. Now, it could be slightly lower than that, but ultimately, that's what we're looking at. So my view is for this to get back to 15, 20, 25, 30p, it's not really a big ask. You know, I mean, if they sell those 100,000, they're going to probably have a cash flow of over £6 million because each product is £100 plus. You know, it's not cheap stuff. So we'll see. As you said, the proof is in the pudding in terms of will they sell the stuff? If they do sell the stuff, this is going to fly. And you know, this is only the beginning as well, because ultimately this is a pharma play, which will be selling stuff initially.
Okay.
So Incantera is my pick at
Okay, good.
4p.
Charles, what are you going for, mate?
Wow, you guys have just seen them. But I'm going to go for GreenX. I think there's three reasons, basically. The first is the money, right? The £252 million arbitration. I read an article about this a couple of months ago, so anyone interested, just read it. But basically, the tribunal has unanimously held that the Republic of Poland breaches obligations under various treaties in relation to the Jan Karski project. Poland has lodged a set-aside request. It's not going to work. There's virtually zero chance that GreenX isn't going to get this money. The threshold is too high. And even the Polish Prime Minister, Donald Tusk, you know, he said that for years they were misled. Later, the commitment was withdrawn. It was quite obvious they would go to arbitration. It was rather obvious that they would win this arbitration. So GreenX is going to get the money, and they've said our intention is to return the majority of available cash to shareholders. That's in an RNS. And Jess, if you have any concerns, the lawyer that they're using, the lawyers, the boys, basically, Tim Foden just won his sixth consecutive case in 2 years yesterday, and recovering a total of $540 million for his clients overall. And this particular client, Lupaco, got $44 million from Peru. They only take on winners. This is going to work. And then the next point is for copper. The Tannenberg Copper Project in Germany was recently selected for the BHP Explore 2025 program. I couldn't come out with you guys, but this is, you know, potentially going to be one of the largest copper plays on the market in the future. The market hasn't seen it yet, but it will be. This is going to be absolutely massive.
Yeah, that's a hell of a story.
1900 kilometers
I'm looking forward
there.
to That's a hell of a story. I'm looking forward to telling you that story.
Oh yeah, well we should talk about it, you know, we should talk about it on a separate thing, but you know, 1900 square kilometers, massive historical, you know, intercepts at 3% copper, and then also like loads and loads and loads of historical data as well. Then you've also got exploration projects in Greenland, you know, but Elinor North, Antimony. This is these are actually quite decent projects they've got. And then finally, it's run by the Dream Team. I'm not going to name the names on here, but anybody who does the background research will know who these guys are. It's funded. They're going to get the legal settlement. They've got an amazing copper project,
Yeah,
and there's no reasons not to pop into it.
and a lot of the thing that Kevin and I learn is that the actual project that you just alluded to, this Tannenberg, is it shares commonalities with the mineralization, which is based on the Poland's, like, the world class. I think it's got the KGHM, which is called the Kupferschiefer.
Kupferschiefer, yeah.
Kupferschiefer, I love that word, like, where the copper mineralization, can be offset up to, it's like 30 meters above and 60 meters below that T1 shale horizon that we talked
Yeah.
about. And
And I think
Kev and I went through, we sat through 3 hours of PowerPoint in a warm room. Kev was melting down. And we were like, yeah, I think we've seen enough PowerPoints now on the T1 shale. But I mean, the amount of information that they've pulled out of archives on these projects
it's decades and
incredible.
decades of it. I mean, it's yeah, I've seen a lot of it. It's the thing is, I mean, one big thing is people think, oh, are you gonna get copper mine, a massive copper mine up and running in Germany? It's like, I know you guys have seen it in person. They're already running massive mines in that region, so it's really not gonna be a problem. Good.
Yeah, good. Well, my final one, or the new addition, is going to be one we've talked about when we've had Jonathan on the podcast a few times, is Tiger Royalties and Investments. They've had quite a strong share performance in the last, let's call it, month to 6 weeks. And the market cap, I think, circa around 15, 16 million, probably 15 million now. And the share price is up around 54% year to date. The Bitenser engagement, obviously, they launched the Tiger Alpha subnet, which I think at its peak was generating around 20.75 tau per day. And then obviously they've expanded that recent subnet footprint by securing the second Beta Bitenser subnet earlier this month, and that's obviously the way that they generate their revenues based on tau performance and these emissions as they've been before. If anyone wants to delve a bit deeper, I do urge you to listen to some of the previous podcasts that we've done with Jonathan, where we've sort of gone really deep into how the whole subnet system works, how you bid for the subnets at auction, and it explains how money is generated for not only the user but also for the company itself. And they've also got the Arok.vc, which is obviously their kind of like AI based crypto coin, or crypto, whatever you want to call it, coin, meme coin type trading system. And it looks set to go. I mean, it's obviously dropped back a little bit in the last few sessions, but I think most of the kind of Bitcoin treasury or Tau treasury plays have done. But that's my choice. I think it's got a long way to go. I think in terms of the amount of revenue that it's generating in Tau at the moment is not reflective in the current share price, around that sort of 15, 16 million cap. So I think it's got legs.
Yeah, good. Good, yeah.
Yeah, I think market cap's a bit less than that. That's 0.28, but yeah, we've heard the CEO say twice on our podcast that this is going to be a £1 billion company. So that is quite a lot of confidence. And if you believe him, then you'd be investing right now, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think the problem with that stock, not problem in terms of with the stock and the company itself, is that there are people constantly saying that they're having problems buying it on certain platforms. And I believe certainly Hargreaves Lansdown is a bit of a problem in terms of they've got to get some documentation together. So once maybe they fix that, I've had many people, numerous people saying, I cannot buy it. I can sell it, but I can't. Or some of them have maybe sold out and they want to buy back in and they're going, ah, I can't. I should never have got, you know what I mean? There's a kind of, so until they sort that out, I think it's going to be hard to trade
I
or
think
buy.
it's the point of being listed is that people can buy your shares
Right.
easily, right? And if they can't buy shares,
IG advert incoming. IG advert
oh,
incoming.
I'm not advertising. I freelance for IG, as you guys know, but
I mean, we had one guy shouting that he had to call his broker, and I felt all I could think was Taylor Woodrow. I want my Taylor
Taylor
Woodrow
Woodrow.
shares.
We're gonna fall out, mate. We're gonna don't make me fall. Don't tell me you
Don't make.
can't buy Taylor Woodrow in this market. Literally, every time that video comes up, every time we'll listen to the whole thing. But I do think with, basically, right, if you have a broker that you phone up, right, like we all do, for larger positions, just call them and they'll be able to get the stock. And if you are using a platform, whether it's Hargreaves or AJ Bell, and they don't have the buy button or you can't buy the stock, take your money elsewhere. We can say IG, IG does have it, but you do have to ask for the quote a few times, but they will have the stock for you. But there are others, basically vote with your wallet and they'll learn. That's the only way they'll learn. If you keep your money on the platform and just complain and they don't do anything, then they learn that they don't need to resolve complaints.
Okay. All right. Well, give us a parting shot, Kev, on where we are with it, how you feel about it, if you think there's any, potential upside, and just your sign us out.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'd like to say also is that if we look at 2024 picks, okay, which was going back a year, we're now up 9% on those picks. So if you'd had patience, you would have now still been up on the picks in 2024. Now, in my view, we've moved into a bull market now in 2025. We've seen AIM move, we've seen the BTC craze begin, and liquidity start to come back into the market. Will some of that money start to drip into the stocks that we've talked about today? My view is absolutely 100% it will. And when it does in a big way, which I'm expecting towards the end of this year, then some of these returns could be incredible. I mean, 10 times on some of those stocks will not seem expensive. But yeah, as normal in the small cap arena, are you going to have some failures? For sure, you're going to have some failures. But the successes, because the failure can only go down 100%, the successes can go up as we've seen with Mass Energy in this particular case, 723%, which is mental. So yeah, all I'd say is please don't concentrate your portfolio too much in one stock. You know, as you always say to me, Phil, don't fall in love with a stock. You know, some people say 4 to 6 stocks is good. Some people say 6 to 10 is good. Some say 40 is good, which I would disagree with very, very much. But the reality is we need diversification, and don't fall in love with your stock.
Yes,
Gold.
diversification only in junior resource way.
Yeah.
We'll pick one specific high-risk sector and diversify in those stocks, and then add in a sprinkle of biotechs, which are notoriously not risky, and crypto stocks, which again have no risk whatsoever. That's
Yeah,
our strategy.
that's our strategy. Well, it's working so far with 60% up on the year. So yeah, I'll take that one.
Good, good.
Okay, well, on that note, if you do like what you heard, as I said at the beginning, please do subscribe, hit the bell icon for future notifications of further episodes. And yeah, everybody, have a great summer. All enjoy.
Thanks, guys. And yeah, hit that notification button.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.